Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me today. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is an inspiring entrepreneur who defies odds in a male-driven industry and has many thoughts on changing this status quo. Rather than focusing on issues, she collaborates with organizations to provide a gateway for young people to develop interest in technology and entrepreneurship. When she was just 8 years old, she submitted her first marketing plan, managed a nonprofit event at 12, led a team of marketers in one of Canada's best managed companies at 24, and was the director at a publicly traded company at 25. She co-founded her first company with her sister, and then leading to a global market share of nonprofit customers for communication and membership management. Today, she is working on a new company, Real Sociable, focused on social insight for deeper engagement with customers. Real Sociable is making a lot of noise and growing rapidly. So far, customers have included such companies as HP, Vodafone, Microsoft, and Salesforce.com. Now, let's hack Dahlia Asterbadi. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks. Not just for sponsoring the show now, but for sponsoring the show for the past over 2 years now, and also for enabling me in my business to take care of the bookkeeping and accounting easier. I absolutely do not like that aspect of business. I like making sales. I don't like taking care of it after the fact. But FreshBooks is luckily built for owners like myself and like you, not for accountants. Plus, FreshBooks has gotten even better. The all-new FreshBooks makes ridiculously easy accounting software that's completely transformed how freelancers and small business owners like you and I deal with their day-to-day paperwork. It's been redesigned from the ground up, custom-built for exactly the way that we work. The most important thing for everyone listening is that getting started on FreshBooks is extremely, extremely simple. Even if you're like me and not a numbers person. Actually, especially if you're not a numbers person. Because FreshBooks is not for accountants. It's for owners like us. Easy invoicing, invoice customization, insights into your numbers and invoices, plus simple deposits and online payments. I use FreshBooks every day in my business. And you should too. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to my listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Go right now to freshbooks.com/hack for your 30-day unrestricted free trial. All right, we're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and we have another amazing guest. Dahlia, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Dahlia, let's jump straight into this. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I believe being an entrepreneur or someone who sets on a mission to contribute or influence the growth of not only their own business, but the businesses that they seek out to be as customers is someone who really tries to understand the situation on the other side, understand the business, understand the people behind it and their motivation, and most importantly, the will to excel and truly contribute to their success is a driving force.
Excellent. So does that put you, there seems to be two camps for people who become entrepreneurs. Somebody who wants to contribute and has this calling to make something bigger than themselves in the world and make a difference, or they simply cannot work for somebody else. Can you tell me where you would fit in?
I think it was this need to be able to scale what I would do for a company. Now, I've been lucky to have had a career that was in, you know, high growth emerging startups, which meant it was always an entrepreneurial spirit, no matter if I was working with someone or not. But generally, as I went through these different roles and realized how much I enjoy achieving our success milestones as a growing company, I just thought, well, how do I do this at a faster, bigger, and apply that skill to more people, which really inspired me to set out my entrepreneurial journey.
Nice. And now in your, you like how when you worked in startups that you still had that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. You're all in it together. You're all trying to build something big and fast. Do you still try and bring that ethic into, or that culture into your companies now?
Yeah, I have a slight advantage where our company and our software platform actually supports the sales enablement of the companies we do business for. And so that, to answer your question, it certainly is. I think being able to take the shortest path to achieve success, being nimble, not having to, you know, assess different business goals by how much budget you have is really the driving force behind doing it. And certainly having the experience as a startup where you continuously had to compete with larger giants at a very small budget helps us, and even the team as we build it, coming from that culture.
Excellent. I like it. Okay, we're going to move to work if we can. I believe you work in an office with staff and stuff at this point, right?
Yes. Not many, okay. But growing one at a time.
Nice. Can you tell us or walk us through, today was a work day. Can you walk us through, say, the first 30 minutes of your work day to kind of set yourself up to be productive and get the things done that you need to get done?
That's a good question. So one of the things we do on a daily basis is look at actually our customers' sort of, you know, tools, sort of our admin of how we are servicing them. So it's really starting with the results that our customers have, because that essentially sets us up for any of the tactical or reactive things that we would have to mobilize for the day. So that starts off my day. Second, look at any ongoing tasks that we may be, you know, approaching deadlines or our own internal deadlines, and just being able to say, hey, do we need to deprioritize? Do we need to prioritize new things? And really looking at an agile way where we don't limit the number of process. So for example, one of the things that we realized this morning was the way we were doing some of our, you know, sales force and our own opportunity planning limited our ability to do different reports. So we said, hey, let's just go back and fix this so we don't have to. And it just really gives us the chance to scale when it's required versus adding a lot of layers and process that will become cumbersome and also not adhere to the culture we're building.
Yeah. So just adapt to, I guess, what the business needs.
Yep. And it's customers first. So anything that requires us to reach out to customers is always number one.
Excellent. How did the idea of Real Sociable come from? Come to being, and how did you decide to take it to being an actual business?
Well, that's an interesting segue from your earlier question around what drives me. I think, you know, one of the advantages I had, you know, and I became an entrepreneur even while in university, was that I was an engineer, yet, you know, I was driven to develop different growth strategies. And so, you know, being technically driven marketer, where you kind of looked at everything in this sort of large scale system where everything had to have a feedback loop. So one of the things that I would do continuously is do little Google scripts, and this goes back many years ago, so that I could help the sales teams get a broader picture of the opportunities that we had so we can mitigate any risk or competitive takeouts without us, you know, putting a lot of money in reacting to it or managing escalations. And as, you know, different tools became more prevalent and, of course, social grew, I realized particularly that my skill set was being lost. You know, there was only so many things you could do to understand the evolving Google index and how you would manage the need to have more leads, which meant more data. And I said, there has to be a better way. You know, I'm either going to have to hire someone to do this, you know, hack that I was doing just to give myself and the team an advantage, or we should step back and see how technology can facilitate that. And that's really what was the burning feeling in the back of my mind. And as I just kept going through the process and seeing how more difficult it was, I realized it would be something that most people would require one day, because the challenges are not just happening in a high growth environment, they're happening everywhere.
Wow. So you're a developer and an engineer. I didn't know that.
I am, yes. Yes, a systems engineer. And, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a proficient developer at this point, but ironically, the only development language that I learned, and I don't want to date myself, that is in use and actually making a comeback is Java. So, you know, it's okay now, but most of the languages I learned kind of went obsolete.
Yeah, they tend to do that sometimes. But do you think that that plays a role, like, you know, a beneficial role to you as a CEO now, as a co-founder, knowing, at least having a decent grasp, rather than the completely non-technical co-founder who just has to hopefully trust that the development is going correctly?
You know, it's funny. I sometimes joke and say there's a double-edged sword. So I'll start with the negative, where, you know, because you can get involved and put yourself deeply in two different buckets, it can sometimes influence the way you want to grow your business. Knowing, you know, too much about sales and your customers and what their roadmap is along with your product, you kind of can, you know, merge the two hats, and sometimes becomes difficult. But most of the time, and yes, even in the past, not just with Real Sociable here, it gives you a conduit, not only to work within the teams, but really understand what the desired results are with a technology that helps you then craft a more tight positioning statement, a better, you know, selling proposition, assessing your competitors and their potential architecture, and how your differentiator and unique advantage can scale gives you the tools to enable sales to make more effective qualification and sales cycles. So yes, definitely. I think, you know, the more languages you speak, the more you can communicate with people and understand. And that certainly helps manage both internal teams, but also customer teams.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you don't have to know all of it. Like, you don't have to know necessarily what the development's doing exactly. But I think you're right with the language of it. And I guess just knowing enough just to be dangerous within it is good rather than it's completely new to you. And it sounds like I would kind of make like the perfect CEO for a tech company.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'll use that quote on my LinkedIn profile later. But, you know, as said by John, I make the perfect CEO.
As you explained it, it really does make sense, because you're right. You can take bits from each of them and then bring it to sales, and then take parts from sales and bring it to development. You know, it's great. I love it.
No, and you're right. I mean, there is this level where, you know, I think it becomes harder to find people who have a business and finance mindset, but also a development mindset. And I think from a management point of view, I tend to forget that. And because you understand how everyone works and how they are motivated. So it's not just from an abstract, how do you design the ship and sell it, but also how do you culturally make sure, you know, we're all speaking the same language internally, which tends to be one of the hardest things in growing a team.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. They speak completely different languages. Engineers, I mean, are renowned for they just want the product. They just want to build the code. And then there's the salespeople who just need to find a way just to sell it. They almost don't even care sometimes what the product is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that would be very beneficial. Okay, let's move to struggles and failures. Mm-hmm. As entrepreneurs and as human beings, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes, and failing. Yet this is something we do in our businesses all the time, and we have to kind of work through it. Can you tell me how to be wrong?
Yeah. Don't anticipate being wrong. Just understand when you are and move on. I think this is something that in all my different points, not just recently, have I had to truly kind of go through this self-discovery and awareness process. You know, being wrong when you're with a team and a founding team that supports and sort of fills the gap is easier, right? Because someone will always kind of drive. And one of the awesome things that I had failed to realize is when I was involved with Club Runner, it was founded with my two sisters, who also were computer science, but each had different creative inputs. And, you know, we used to kind of tease and call it fusion management at some point, because decisions were made through, you know, almost like a simulated case. And that helped us sort of learn how to redefine the models and operating plans and budgets without us waiting till it's too late. But I think what happens now, and if you fast forward, we've built this culture around move really fast when you're building a company. And it's somehow influenced because technology adapts really fast. So if you're building something now, you know, you don't want to take it to market 5 years from now, because chances are it's either no longer applicable or there's a bigger, better, faster way of doing that scenario. But being wrong is hard to understand if you allow your ego in the way. And I think a lot of times the fear of being wrong masks the trigger points of when you should be realizing you're doing something wrong. And I think one of the things I always advise is don't let your ego drive the business, because you will fear the past and the future and sadly not mobilize yourself to make decisions. I am now in a place where I enjoy making mistakes. I enjoy relishing about all my failures or mistakes, because it's given me a new sense of insight that will prevent me from doing it again. And I think that is one of the strongest areas that people may not necessarily correlate with when they speak about failure. You know, we talk about it as if it's a glorified way to become better. But if you're not truly connecting with what the mistake may have been and learning from that, well, nothing is worse than making the same mistake over and over and over. And that's something that sometimes is not, you know, as obvious. So I encourage making my mistakes as long as I ensure that it's something that will, you know, the fix is something that I implement versus just kind of emotionally allow it to overcome me.
Yeah, that's a great point. The glorification of failure and not the spotlight put on the actual education from it. You can't just fail and make mistakes all the time and become successful and just keep bullheadedly going ahead, right? If you don't learn from it, it's completely pointless to be wrong.
I think the motivation for becoming an entrepreneur needs to be selfless. You know, it's like you're giving birth to this baby, you know? And so your mistakes are not about you. It's how, you know, the growth and the well-being of this baby called your business can be overcome and actually benefit. You know, think about when you were much younger and, you know, your first failed exam. You know, did you say, that's okay, I'll just keep failing, it's no big deal? No, it's not about accepting the mistake you made. It's adapting to it so that it actually creates benefit for your own upbringing or your own development and enhances your outlook on the future. So I think that's one of the things that is forgetting that it's not you, it's the business. So, you know, it's okay for you to make the mistake as long as you can kind of predict or help prevent that stifling the growth of your baby.
Right. And do you ever say struggle though with, you're the CEO, you come up with an idea of something that needs to be implemented in the business and you start this, say, project, and feedback sort of comes back that maybe it's the wrong direction to take, but you know, like in your gut or something, that no, this is something we have to power through and this will be right. It just doesn't look right now. There's that balance, right? Like, you are the leader, you're the CEO at this point, yet you do have to take that feedback loop. But at the same time, sometimes do you just have to know that you're right as well?
That's a really good point. And it resonates very strongly with me with real sociable because we were way ahead of our time. In fact, you know, when we first sort of went out there seeking beta clients and were building, you know, software, we just would get people that said, nope, you should do this. And I think one of the most important things is understanding the vision, you know, and this is for a totally different discussion, but sometimes this notion of the lean startup or pivoting rapidly is not necessarily correctly if you're building an enterprise or sort of a long tail sort of solution with a vision that may not necessarily have an adoption cycle that's now, you know? And so you're absolutely right. One of the things is being stubborn about it, because at the end of the day, you know, and this is something I share a lot of times, if you seek too much counsel in decisions like this, where you're conflicted with your intuition and you decide to go with the, you know, feedback path, and that becomes ineffective, you know, you can't say, well, we failed because they said so. You know, you still put yourself as the person who managed that issue. And so if you're conflicted, you know, go with your gut first, because at the end of the day, there's no one you can blame but yourself. And so you have to make sure you're confident with those decisions, because then the only way you can get out if that becomes the wrong direction would be with your vision and gut. So it can't just, it's not an opt-in process.
Right. Very, very well said. And so this kind of takes us into projects. We know how you kind of deal with it now, and you have to stubbornly go ahead sometimes, and sometimes you have to take that feedback. But how, say, let's walk back to the beginning of this project. Mm-hmm. Project I use as a broad sense for the business, but it could be a new feature for the product. It could be just something you take on for your customers, anything that you might do, a new market you might try and enter. How is it you make a decision at this point with Real Sociable to take on a new project?
Well, I speak to a lot of first-time entrepreneurs who are in their sort of first year. And I always say, you know, the first 2 years of your journey is really just kind of figuring it out. The best way to accelerate that and mitigate, you know, the churn and wasted effort is by building a true inner circle, or, as you know, an advisory board, but not in the sense of just get as many people as you can to provide input. You know, there has to be a method you use to define how certain consensus is made. And to your point earlier, it's your leadership and how you define it. If nothing is worse than being in a room and throwing out something and then everyone, you know, speaks to it and you're not really sure who's making the notes, who's taking the action and who's doing it and who's accepting it. And so that's where I think certain process needs to be applied, where when you put out something in the project, whether it is a feature or your go-to-market strategy, you know, seek counsel, but also understand their experience and their perspective or why they're counseling you. Sometimes we go out and speak to a group of potential customers and we say, yep, they said it, let's do it. And by the time you build it and you come back to them, you say, well, that was something we were working on at the moment. We've already moved on and, you know, brought in something else. And then you say, well, you told me. And that's where you end up saying, like, oops, I should have known that they were looking at something on a very tactical, current point of view, where someone else who's looking at it from a finance point of view or a sales point of view, you know, really just build that sort of almost like, you know, and this is where the engineer in me comes in, you know, the abstract view of the design of why certain data points are coming. And if there's common elements in the feedback, pay attention to it. Don't necessarily just dismiss it because you said so. I think that's where there's a fine balance around assessing feedback and seeking counsel. That's very imperative. I see a lot of people make mistakes there where they either leave the decisions to other people or entirely operate in a vacuum. And I think those are extremes that create risk for you.
Very well said. Very well said. Okay, Dahlia, we're going to end with success and the future. Mm-hmm. We're sitting at the beginning of a new year, and I'm hoping you've planned this out somewhat, but we're sitting here at the beginning of a new year. What is it you want to achieve personally and within Real Sociable for the year 2015 that would make you very happy at the end of the year that you've accomplished?
Well, besides doing Back to the Future party.
Hell yeah.
Because it is this year. Scary, right?
It is.
I think actually it's kind of interesting where I make decisions on two-year scenarios. You know, how will this be of significance 2 years from now? And so 2015 is an interesting one where on a personal side is, you know, getting my book published and released, but more importantly, being able to dedicate more time to what I used to do more of, which is volunteer and contribute to the education and sort of growth of people. So that's on a personal side, is being able to spend more time and also sort of en masse, you know, share the knowledge I've gained over my experience so I could inspire, whether it's a young person or someone who's looking to do something very similar. On a business level, we do have some very significant milestones we're looking for. You know, we're planning on opening an office in New York. We also are planning to do our new release, which is scheduled for the spring, summer this year. And growth. I think we once set out sort of this sort of visual around certain metrics. So getting the two partnerships sort of formalized that we've been working with, getting the right growth internally so we can make sure we scale. And I think most importantly is this year is about understanding what the real future of the business is. You know, we've been in a place now where, you know, we're going to have to assess, is this a self-growth and leading into a profitable model? And so it is a critical year for us. And, you know, one of the key things is like I shared in your first question, is understanding the metrics that are really relevant to you. You know, where, you know, you may have to fire some customers so you can get the right customers who will work profitably with the model you've built. And so it's just kind of resetting our expectations and making sure our milestones are hit and celebrating every little milestone.
Yeah. I love that. Having big milestones, yet also celebrating every little one. And the two-year scenarios is an impressive way to think. I think that's smart. And a New York office. I love it. It's good. Canadian company. I love seeing the big moves into the States. I think more of us need to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's, we love being Canadian, but our American customers, you know, their growth and experience requires us to be local. And I think the New York office is not just because we wanted a New York office. It's part of that is to be more locally central and create a more high touch service point with some of our customers. As we grow revenue with specific customers, it's, you know, a different frequency and interaction, and being able to support them in a local level is one of the goals we have in mind. So yeah, but yes, it will be fun.
I love it. And the book, is it being published?
It is. And it's, you know, sometimes it's just delayed for the sake of it kind of not being as much of a priority. But yes, it's, the book originally began on a very long flight where I had a conversation with someone and I said, I'm going to write a manifesto. But essentially it became the 21 immutable plays of prospecting. And it is 21 broken down not only by theory, but examples and templates and use cases to test every strategy to implement in a sales and marketing function. And it's really exciting because the best thing out of it now in its editing stage is every time someone approaches us with an idea, you say, hey, that's actually play number 7, or that's, you know, play number 13, which is customer segmentation with personas. And so it's actually helped us manage the amount of content that we need to generate. And, you know, that's probably what's caused the delay, as we're using it without it actually being out there, but we'll get it out there soon enough.
Awesome. I love it. 21 immutable plays of prospecting.
Correct.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, you are looking forward to sharing your experience and knowledge in the next year and year after that. And I thank you for sharing your knowledge and experience with us today. It's been absolutely my pleasure.
I appreciate it so much, John.
And right before we leave, actually, we've mentioned your business in passing. Can you leave everybody, tell them exactly where to find out more about you and your company?
Yeah, you can, you know, look for me on pretty much every channel, Dahlia Astorbatty. You know, you can email me at dahlia@realsociable.com, and you can learn more about, you know, the company itself by visiting realsociable.com. And YouTube is the quickest way of getting some videos and stuff about what we do and how we do it. And I'd love to hear from anyone. And if you're interested in joining forces, give me a shout.
Excellent. I will put those links in the show notes for everyone to find easily. And you should do that. You should reach out. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, John. Look forward to next time.
FreshBooks makes ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that helps over 10 million entrepreneurs like you and me deal with all the paperwork of running a business. Things like formatting and sending invoices, making sure that you get paid on time, and keeping track of receipts and staying organized for tax season. And for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, FreshBooks is offering you a 30-day unrestricted free trial. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Dahlia, thank you so much for that. That was a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you coming on. And I just, if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that I'm, being a Canadian myself, I do seem to get a lot of Canadian entrepreneurs on the show, and Dahlia is definitely one of my favorites. So that was very, very cool that I got to chat with her there. Make sure you reach out to her on Twitter. You'll find her under The Real Sociable, and just say hi. Tell her you heard her on the show and ask, tell her if you caught anything clever that she said, because she said a lot of interesting things, didn't she? But she said one thing. She said one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
If you're conflicted, you know, go with your gut first, because at the end of the day, there's no one you can blame but yourself. And so you have to make sure you're confident with those decisions.
And that's the hack. Dahlia, so well said, and absolutely. And this doesn't matter if you are running a startup or you are running your own business as a solo entrepreneur at this point. You have to learn to go with your gut. You have to learn to know what that feeling is. There's something inside of us that knows when it's the right thing to do and when it's not the right thing to do. And you can have as many blog posts, as many experts, as many coaches, as many tell you to do something else, but sometimes you really have to, no matter what everybody else says, if your gut is telling you something else, you have to absolutely go for it. Because if you don't, I mean, it's true. You have nobody to blame but yourself. Even if you did take somebody else's advice or coaching or anything, and it was the wrong thing to do, it's your fault. It's not theirs, because you are the one in charge. And I absolutely love the way Dahlia said that. And if you've listened to the show, I mean, you know that I really, really, truly believe in following your gut. It's a big thing that I've done, and I've sort of nourished and really, I mean, it's almost detrimental where I can feel things in my gut that that just really, really physically impact me in that way. And it's something you really, really should work on. And it's just, it's innate within us, but you can learn to really follow it and trust it. You just have to. It's yourself. You have to trust yourself that you know what is best for you and your business before anyone else does. And I just thank you for that, Dahlia. Well, that was a lot of fun. Please head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com. There's an email input box right at the very top and next to my pretty face. Put your email in there. I am sending out my best writing I do once a week, every Sunday afternoon that goes out. And I would love to have you on there. You can hit reply to any of those emails and you come straight to my phone or straight to my laptop and we can have a conversation. I would love to talk, but please get on that email list so I can reach out to you. This has been a lot of fun. I truly do thank you for taking the time, and until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.